Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Drive for Show, DFS for Dough here on Roto Grinders. And if you're listening to us at this hour, that means you are wanting to talk some golf. And we're happy to bring that to you as we head towards the latter part of February and the PGA Tour schedule really starts to kick up here over the next month. But a little bit of a breather this week with the Mexico Open. And a very weak field event. So we'll break that down here for you over the next little bit. And of course, we'll take a quick look back at last week. We'll hopefully do our usual snake draft at the end of the show. And to help do that, you've got myself, Justin Van Zuiden, a.k.a. STL Cardinals 84, and my co-host, Mr. Notorious, alongside. And Noto, how's things going?
Yeah, not too bad. If there are any professional golfers out there in need of a win, just hit me up. I'll talk bad about you, and you'll find yourself back in the winner's circle. Last week, Hideki, after I said he had no upside.
Hideki, no upside. Matsuyama shoots 9-under and goes nuclear on Sunday and wins the tournament. And that gave me a little chuckle, I'm not going to lie. And he was 60-1, so that's a stretch now. 7 straight weeks of 60-1 odds. I mean, we don't think of Hideki as a long shot, right, in a traditional sense, but 60-1. In that field, that's pretty long odds. So, it continues.
It continues. My services they're not cheap, but hit me up if you need a win. I was on Luke List last week. He was good for the most part, but man, the Cantlay meltdown really had me tilted on Sunday.
Yeah, that was surprising. And once again, you know, we go back 2 weeks, right? Only two of my golfers missed the cut, and I lost like $80 or something like that. Now, last week, I had in my GPP player pool, again, I play a pretty narrow player pool, so I only played like 19 guys. So I had Matsuyama in my player pool. I had Zalatoris. I had List. I had Cantlay. I had Xander. So I had 5 of the top 6. Everybody except Hadwin was in my player pool, but I had somehow managed to get more guys cut this last week when only like 10 guys went home. Had a few of the landmines there at the bottom. And so despite having exposure to 5 of the top 6 players, I lost like $8 last week. So the last 2 weeks have basically been right around flat, but we've been right there. And I think we had some pretty good takes on the show last week. And Dean Shableson, Roto Grinders fame, took down a couple of GPPs last week for some 5-figure payouts. So, yeah, and they were all guys that, in some form or fashion, you or I had recommended. So, yeah, we were on a decent amount of good plays last week, even though it, Matsuyama ended up winning after he was no upside.
Yeah, good for Dean. Got some messages from a couple members that had some good weeks, too. So, I'd love one of those if it could happen here soon. But, interesting week. Hated to see Tiger having to withdraw. The Jordan Spieth thing was kind of funny. Apparently he had to run to the bathroom and just didn't double check his scorecard, and they sent him back. And what do you think about that old rule? Do you think they just do away with it?
I mean, I think so. I know it's tradition, and but it's archaic. I mean, in this day and age of technology, it doesn't make sense. And I joked on Twitter that, the PGA Tour needs them to do that because the shot link's never right. So they got to have the handwritten scorecards because you can't trust the technology. But you got video of every shot, and it just, I understand it. And it happens, maybe four times a year to somebody, once every 3 or 4 months, you see something like that. But it's just strange to me in this day and age.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm generally anti-Spieth. I wasn't upset that he went home. I didn't have any exposure. But I think it's taken away from the fans, right? If you're a fan, I've had a new perspective on this. After, as a family, we went to our first NBA game this year, and you think about, the cost to take a family of four to a professional sporting event, no matter what it is, and you got, the cost to get there, the cost of the tickets, food and travel and all that stuff really adds up. And so if you're going to like an NBA game and one of the stars like is sitting out, then obviously, you feel like, I got ripped off. I paid $200 for this ticket or whatever. And now, people that were going there, we're going to see Jordan Spieth. He's in, about 15th place or whatever. And then he gets kicked out over a technicality. That's probably a bummer for some Jordan Spieth fans that maybe had tickets to go on the weekend. So, yeah, I think it's kind of short-sighted at this point.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you saw the golfers keep their own scores, just – double check it at the end. If something's off, just ask them, hey, we had to do it for this. I don't know. I shouldn't be.
Yeah, don't hide it from them until, afterwards, you did that wrong. If there's a discrepancy, talk about it and figure it out. But just sending you back in for a handwritten note on a piece of paper, I don't know. It seems weird to me.
Yep. Any other takeaways?
So there was a lot of chalk despite the fact that only, 20 golfers went home. A lot of fairly highly owned guys. Justin Thomas had a terrible week. Wyndham Clark really faded on Friday, missed the cut. Fitzpatrick was down near the bottom. Some other names that had at least some ownership, Straka, Keegan missed the cut on the numbers. So, yeah, it was pretty weird for a 70 golfer event. 51 guys made the cut for there to be, so many guys that had some ownership going home, particularly Thomas after, the really good start to the year that he had. He was one of maybe the highest owned golfer on the board. If not, he was right up there. That was one that really surprised me last week.
Yeah, I think we can say don't play Thomas when he's playing with Tiger. And I think we can say don't play Cantlay or Xander when they're paired together in the final group. I think that's happened a couple of times where they both have kind of struggled there, especially Cantlay. I think it was the Travelers last year before. He had a lead, was paired with Cantlay, chunked one in the water on the par three, and shot over the par for the day. And they both struggled on Sunday. So maybe
which is weird because they do the team stuff together.
Yeah,
and they've had success at that.
Too comfortable. Maybe there's not enough edge in the pairing. I don't know what it is, but yeah, Charlie Hoffman came back down to earth a little bit. That was to be expected, although he did make the cut, unlike a lot of the golfers that you just talked about. Rory hasn't been great so far, at least on the PGA Tour. He played well over in Europe before coming over here. But no other strong takeaways for me.
Yeah, I think that's good for a recap of last week. Obviously, shorter field event. Good for Hideki picking up the win with the absolutely dynamite final round and final back nine there on Sunday, and pretty much pulled away on his own there at the end, away from Luke List and Will Zalatoris, who played pretty well in their own right, but just didn't quite keep up with that 9-under par round on Sunday. All right, let's turn our attention to this week, which is kind of a void in the calendar. So this is a tournament that was played last year, I think towards the end of April. It's been moved up a couple months with the changes in the schedule this year to the last full week of February. I think you've got some events coming up, the Arnold Palmer, the first full week of March. You got the players in the middle of March. And so a lot of guys are kind of taking this week, maybe next week as well, to rest up a little bit before the calendar gets busy in March. And then, of course, for the Masters in April. So this is one of the weaker fields that we've seen in quite some time. I mean, maybe even if you compare it back to the fall swing, probably even weaker than some of those. It's a course that's being used. This is the third time we've had this event. So 2 years of past data here on the PGA Tour, and just a remarkably weak field that we've got this week. But what do we make of the course to start out?
Yeah, so it's a Norman Signature course. It's a par 71, 7,456 yards. So one of the longest par adjusted courses on the PGA Tour. You mentioned the change in time of year, so you're probably not going to see the ball travel as far as it has the last couple of years. And we've seen this be a bomber's paradise, you know, 40-yard wide fairways, playable rough. The holes are obviously very long. So I think we're going to see even more of that this year. Although I do think the bomber narrative is probably going to get everyone's taking it a little bit too far. Like, all you hear in any content this week is you have to play a bomber. So anybody that hits it like 310, anybody that's in the top 20 in driving distance in this field is automatically going to get an ownership bump. So I don't mind looking at guys that are good with long irons. You're going to see over 40% of approach shots hit from at least 200 yards. So guys that, you know, aren't necessarily bombers, they better be good long iron players if you want to keep them in your player pool. Guys like Mark Hubbard, Michael Kim, just a couple that came to my mind. The greens are easy to hit. Scrambling's very easy around here, so I'm not looking at strokes gained around the green at all. The greens themselves are past pollen, but you can't really look at past data for that because this is the only past pollen course that has strokes gained data. So all the others, like the Puerto Rico, and some of the others, they don't have any strokes gained data. So I wouldn't look at any putting splits because you would just be looking at, you know, two tournaments from this specific tournament. And yeah, birdies are going to be good. Doesn't look like there's going to be any weather. I was looking at the forecast today. 8 miles per hour is the strongest wind that we're going to get, at least in the forecast. So going to see some low scores. I kind of think somewhere around Tony Finau's number of 2,400 par is probably going to get the job done.
Yeah, it'll be interesting when you see a tournament that lends itself to being more of a birdie fest and it's a relatively weak field. That lends itself to a little bit more unpredictability. Sometimes you get to see, you know, you see kind of lopsided weird leaderboards in events like this. So naturally this will be the week where like the chalk all finishes, you know, inside the top five. After we've seen so many long shots win, it'll probably, you know, this will be the week where maybe you don't expect it to go according to plan and then it does, but we'll have to see how that shakes out over the course of the week. But totally with you. I mean, obviously the profile of the course is that bombers are going to be the ones you want to target, but don't mind taking some shorter hitters as well, especially if the ownership tends to skew in that other direction. And with the general unpredictable nature of a weak field event, don't be afraid to maybe take some shots this week. So with that, we'll go ahead and get into it. A little bit tighter pricing on DraftKings this week for usually with these weaker fields, sometimes you see it get a little bit loose in terms of pricing. They've kind of flipped the switch to make sure that didn't happen this week. So instead of our usual like three or four, we've got five guys above 10,000, and Finau is all the way up to 12K. Grillo and Højgaard, then Olesen and Dietrich rounding out the 10K plus range. I mean, Finau, obviously the favorite here. He's finished first and second in the first two editions. And, you know, he's the one guy that really doesn't feel mega overpriced when you consider that everybody else, you know, again, relatively speaking, is going to feel a lot more expensive than usual. So Finau, I guess, deserves a discussion on his own. Is he a jam him in and don't overthink it? Or, you know, maybe 40% ownership. You try to go for the fade here. What do we do with Finau?
So it's funny because originally I was like, there's no way I can get to 40%. And then I recorded my little model video before this. I was talking about all the other 10K guys, and I was like, well, you can't pay this much for Griot, can't pay this much for, you know, Torbjorn or Dietrich. And I was like, well, maybe I will end up getting overweight on Finau just because I don't want to pay a bunch for all these others. You mentioned the tighter pricing, but the pricing floor is actually down to 5K this week. So typically it's a 6K, so you're going to have – I think there's like 50 golfers that are in the 5K range this week. So
yeah, but they all stink.
Yeah, I'll see. But I mean, so did the 6Ks and 7Ks. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's that hard to fit Finau if you want him. He's the one golfer that doesn't feel overpriced in the whole field, probably. He's been played here twice, first and second. He's a bomber, number one in stroke gain approach, more than 200 yards. So I like Finau. Are you locking him, or are you going to get different?
Yeah, I mean, I almost never like completely lock anybody because I always fear the WD in that case. Like if I'm playing like three lineups or something, maybe. But yeah, if you're doing 50, 75, 100 lineups, I almost always just I don't lock guys, but getting 60, 70, 80%, I think, you know, that certainly makes sense because I'm not playing any of these other guys above 10K. Like, yeah. I mean, Højgaard's been really good, but just rather take Finau and then take my chances elsewhere. Dietrich, I think, is fine as well. But, you know, at 10-1, I don't know. Maybe it's the five-figure price tag that's making that more of a sticker shock. But it just seems to me like if you're up there, just get Finau and figure it out from there.
Yeah, I mean, if you just base the pricing off of odds, you know, Finau's like plus 750, and the next closest is Højgaard at plus 1800. So it should be Finau at like 12, and then everyone else at like low tens, maybe. So yeah, I have a hard time not just playing him. You know, Grillo's got some good course history, but he's not really a bomber. Doesn't really fit the narrative that we're looking for. I think Olesen's interesting. His last eight events worldwide, he hasn't finished worse than T21. Coming off of a win, so I don't mind him in tournaments. Looks like he's going to be, you know, 11% owned or so. He's probably my second favorite up here.
Yeah, definitely. And another guy that, you know, a lot of people don't know a whole lot about, relatively speaking, because, you know, he hasn't played many PGA Tour events, but the form in the fall on the DP World Tour was really good. So don't mind playing him if you're looking for an ownership angle there. But for my purpose, I will just be overweight on Finau for sure. All right, let's go ahead and move into the 9Ks. If you want to play the bomber narrative, that certainly fits the Keith Mitchell profile. He's 9,900, probably doesn't deserve that price tag given his form over the past 6 or 8 months. So even though I like Keith Mitchell, it's tough for me to get there. Jaeger continues to kind of fly under the radar a little bit, not in our little bubble, but just in general. I don't think he gets enough respect for how good he's become. Like, Jaeger hasn't missed a cut since April of last year, like 22 events now, I think, without missing a cut. So Rogers, it has been super inconsistent. Interested in Noto's take after he missed a cut last week on a bomber's course. Do you go back to him this week? Pendrith is pretty long off the tee, so on this mid to upper part of the 9K range, Jaeger is definitely my favorite. What are you looking at in here?
Yeah, I do like Patrick Rogers, 10th here each of the last 2 years, number three in this field in strokes gained per round on past follow-up courses. He's number one in my course fit metric. And yeah, I like the course history. He did miss a cut last week, but it was right on the number, so I can forgive him for that.
It was right on the number on a week where only like 20 guys went home.
I mean, hey, he beat JT. If you would have told me that at the start of the week, I'd be happy with it.
You thought it would be a pretty good week.
I like Pendrith a lot. He's been playing. You know, he's also been inconsistent, but he's got four top tens in his last seven starts. Another bomber, T30 here last year. No issue with Jaeger. You mentioned his consistency. Easy guy to start cash game lineups with, whether you want to pair him with Finau or just start with Jaeger. I don't mind starting with two or three of these guys and building from there. But I'm not going to be on Mitchell. So maybe this is the week Mitchell comes back and win. This is the Hideki Luke List winning week for Keith Mitchell. I just don't see it. I have him like 19th overall, 9,900, steep price point. So no interest there. Same goes for McKenzie Hughes. Just hard for him. I mean, why is he 9,400?
Yeah, I don't get it. Because they did do an interview with him on TV last week, live during his round. Did you see that?
I heard some of his quotes about the tour and stuff.
Yeah, it was just interesting because, you know, and they had some pretty good back and forth dialogue with him and his caddy. He had hit a tee shot like onto the cart path and actually ended up saving par on the hole that They were talking to him, and yeah, I mean, obviously his quotes about the tour have made it, but like that sort of stuff is interesting. I think that's the sort of stuff that they can kind of work into broadcasts and kind of make it more relatable to the fans, because you know, they were talking about whether he was going to try to go long on his approach or try to leave it short. Obviously he wasn't going straight for the pin because he was like 30 yards left of the fairway behind a tree and off the cart path. So it was just interesting to see that, that kind of dialogue between player and caddy.
Yeah, I like that. You know what I don't like? I was watching, you know, I watched Tiger's group and the featured groups or whatever. And when they, every time they would get on the green, they would show the longest putt that each golfer has made on that hole in their careers. It's like, what? Like in 1999, Tiger made a 37 footer on hole number 12. It's like, show me the odds of him making this 12 foot putt. Give me like this. The stuff that they come up with when they have all this, all these cool stats that they could put out, just drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird because nobody cares about that putt in a random, you know, second round of an event in 95. That
it was every putt on every hole.
Yeah, it's strange. Strange, but that's the coverage we get on the PGA Tour these days. All right, so let's see. I sidetracked myself there talking about Mackenzie Hughes, but I'm with you. I am not on him this week either. I think that Jaeger, Rogers, Pendrith range, that's where if you're going for a guy in here, get one of those guys. I'm a Ryan Fox guy myself, but I given his inconsistency, I don't think I can pay $9,300 for Ryan Fox, even though he is a bomber. Don't really have a whole lot of interest in anybody else in the lower 9Ks, except for, you know, I think Hubbard is fine, but probably just like a cash game type of play.
Yeah, I like Hubbard. One of the best with the long irons. Pretty consistent too. So, yeah, probably better cash. But I did sprinkle a little bit on him in my outright card. And what about Brandon Wu with second and third place finishes here? Are we just paying for course history?
Yeah, pretty much. I think, I mean, you look at the last three events, miscut, 47th miscut. He's got one top 20 since the fall swing. So that, I don't think I'm super interested there.
Yeah, if I'm paying for a course history guy, I think it's going to be Cam Champ, 8,600. So we'll move into the eighth. He's just one of those guys. He plays well, like four courses every year. He's finished eighth and sixth here. He's a bomber. Are you playing any Champ?
I don't hate that play, but I like that range quite a bit. I wish he wasn't so expensive, but I like Jake Knapp. He's a bomber that has finished pretty well his last couple events. And a lot of these events, you know, you look at it was the Farmers Insurance. He finished T3. That's a course that really rewards good drivers of the ball as well. Another, you know, Doug Gim has played well his last couple tournaments. I always like some Doug Gim as long as he can make some putts. Back-to-back top 15s for him. Davis Thompson's a guy I've played quite a bit as well. So, yeah, all those guys are plenty long off the tee there too. So I think you can make an argument for really any of those guys in the upper part of the 8K range here.
Yep. Don Yeezy's agreeing with you. He likes Thompson and Knapp. I like those two as well. Knapp's just absolute bomber. I can't wait to see what he can do in this field. A couple top 10s recently. So he's probably my favorite other than Champ. And then the lower eights, not as much interest. McNealy's shown some signs of life coming off of a T6, but the ball striking still worries me a little bit. I think Michael Kim's interesting, kind of in the same mold as Mark Hubbard, and that he's not the longest off the tee, but he's added some distance. He's really good with the long irons. Doesn't look like he's going to get a lot of ownership just due to the course fit. And I think he's one of the better players in the 8Ks.
Who's that?
Michael Kim.
Yeah, I think he's a steady option there for sure at 80. What is he, 82? Yeah, 8,200. And the lower part of the 8Ks, I think, is pretty weak. So I like trying to get to one of those upper end guys. And then, you know, Kim at 8,200, if you absolutely need somebody in that range, I think is probably the best of the bunch. We've seen up and down form from guys like McNealy. McNealy's played a little bit better the last couple weeks. So I suppose he'd be my 1B there, but probably not a range where I will have a whole lot of exposure otherwise. No Hoffman for me this week. So, yeah, that's probably it. Anything else above 8K for you?
Don't know what I'm going to do with Aaron Rye yet. similar to Michael Kim, I think he's better than most of the guys priced around him, just not the best course fit. So struggling with that one.
All right. So you can talk about the hothead, your boy Toasty there at 7,800 if you would, if you'd like. But the upper part of the 7K range, you start to get a lot more kind of boom or bust plays in here. Anybody standing out to you, 7,500 to 8K?
Yeah, Toasty's got to be feeling good. Speed's taking some heat off of his back for signing the incorrect scorecard, so he's going to be all ready to go. T10 here last year, one of the longest golfers you know, off the tee in this field. He's second over the last 12 months. And I was looking at his Korn Ferry stats. He has a 40% top 10 rate on the Korn Ferry Tour. And, yeah, T10 here last year. So love Toasty, 7,800. Outside of that, I'm going to play some Johnny Vegas. You know, he's still working his way back from injury, but last time out, gained 7.2 strokes ball striking at Waste Management. Another guy very long off the tee, very good with long irons. Norman, we currently have Norman at like 7 or 2% ownership. I just don't think that's going to hold because he's a bomber. If it does hold, I'll definitely be overweight. But what are your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, I like Johnny V. I think I was looking at his stats. Like, you look at the last 4 months, 6 months, he's like bottom 10 in this field in all the short game stuff and near the top in all the off the tee and approach stuff. So if he can just be not like completely abysmal on the greens, I think he's got a shot to have a solid week here. Don't have as strong of a take on Norman, though. You know, if that ownership holds, I would agree with your thought there. Lashley's a guy that I think is a decent flyer here as well. He's been boom or bust lately, more bust than boom, but was T3 at the Farmers Insurance. Again, of course, that kind of rewards a similar skill set. And he's not necessarily a bomber by any means, but he has played here each of the first two times and solid finishes both times. So Lashley, I think, is fine. Carson Young at 7,400, I think, is fine. And that's kind of the most of my interest in the mid 7Ks there.
Yeah, Carson Young rates out really well for me. Pretty long off the tee. Don Yeezy's bringing up Alexander Bjork. So, look, I played this guy a ton over on the DP World Tour. He's one of the shortest hitters off the tee, but he's also an elite iron player and elite putter. So, I don't hate the Bjork call. I don't think it's a perfect course fit for him, but he probably does have a little bit more upside than some of these guys. Sam Stevens is getting some love due to the bomber angle. I don't know. I don't have a ton of interest in anyone else down
there. Yeah, I think Stevens is okay. I'm not playing anybody like Goddard. Stallings tends to pop on random events like this sometimes. I mean, I think you could take a flyer there, but it's not, you don't want to be playing like 8, 10, 12 different guys in here. Try to, again, of course, I'm always one that tries to narrow my player pool, but yeah, not a whole lot of interest in the lower 7Ks for me. I'd rather play somebody in the high sixes. Like, I think Bramlett is a really good fit here. I know he's grading out really well in the projections also. Victor Perez, like, you can make a case for at 6,700. So those are a couple guys I like for sure in the upper sixes. What about you?
Yeah, I like the Victor Perez call, like the Bramlett call. I'm going to be on both of them. Just trying to see. I had a couple other names here. Parker Cootie, I think he's a guy that you've been on a little bit. He was T25 of Farmers, bomber off the tee. He's playing a lot better than his brother at the moment. Ben Coles rates out well for me, but we talked about him. I think I want to say it was at the Farmers where he just doesn't have the distance off the tee, but he's better than, at least better form than a lot of these guys. Ben Silverman rates out well for me. He's 6,200. And then got some flyers in the 5Ks, but nobody I feel great about.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot in the 5Ks either. Jorge Campillo, if you want a flyer at 6,400. Solo fifth at the Qatar Masters, his last start, and has a pretty good history on past Palom as well. So, again, nobody that's probably going to knock your socks off there at 6,400, but familiarity with the grass, I think, and plenty of experience on the DP World Tour. Coles, you know, I played him a lot more maybe earlier here in January, not so much lately. He's kind of faded a bit since then, but I think Campillo is fine at 6,400. And then, yeah, unless you want to play the other Cootie, Norman Zhang, long off the tee, 5,800, was leading an event for like a day a few weeks ago. If you want to target the Panda there, he's only 5,800.
Yeah, I'll play some Panda, maybe like 5%. The other two guys down there that I had notes on, Tom Whitney and Kevin Dougherty. Both of them made the cut at the Farmers. Both of them really long off the tee. Don't really know a ton about the rest of their games, but they are in the 5Ks. And, man, Francesco Molinari, 6,100. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
The turntables have turned. Yeah, I just can't play him, especially on a bomber course. But, yeah, you can see a few guys down here that have had some success in the past. Right, Scott Piercy's 5,300. He was a thing for a while. Lipsky, we've played some in the past, is 5,500. But obviously, these guys are in the 5Ks for a reason, because the current form is more than a little questionable for most of these guys down here. So, anybody else that we have missed? It's obviously a weak field event, so the viable options are at a premium more so this week.
Donizzi brought up Harry Hall, Justin Lower. Those are names that we at least know, but I don't think the course fits particularly good for either of them. But yeah, I don't hate them if you're MMEing.
All right. Well, with that, it's about time for us to fire up our usual snake draft at the end of the show. So reminder before we do that, if you want to exit and you don't want to go through the snake draft, feel free to pop off at any time, but hit that thumbs up button, subscribe to the YouTube channel. And of course, don't forget to check us out over at rotogrinders.com. And you can check out our new PGA Sim Labs tool, simulates the contest or simulates the tournament, a bunch of different ways to figure out, you know, the optimal lineups for smaller field tournaments, large field tournaments. You can customize some inputs in there, and it is really slick. If you like it a lot, get yourself a premium subscription over at Roto Grinders. You can check out, I believe we've got a link in the description as well with some further information on that. But for those of you that want to stick around for the snake draft, we can go ahead and move to that now.